Hello, everybody. Just give me a minute. Give me a minute to put everything together. Sorry. There we go. It's good to see everybody. If you want to turn on your screen, I'd appreciate that. If not, that's okay. I think our students are our children, are in different grades. So I hope to speak both generally about what we're doing when we're teaching our children Gemara, but also specifically to grades. So if you take a moment just to put in the chat what ages your Gemara learners are, it could be very helpful to kind of get a feel of where everybody is, because I'm sure there's some people who are, you know, beginner Gemara readers, and that's fifth, sixth grade, but some people are older. I see it in seventh grade. Tenth grade. Great, great. So a little mix. A little mix. Yeah. And there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to learn when you transition from moving from Chumash and Rashi to Mishnah and then to Gemara. And you know, some of the key things are in language, and we'll definitely cover you know, elements of language structures that are different, and you know, that think about it, right? It's like you practice reading and you have a natural you know, context in which you learn Hebrew and davening. And then Mishnayos and Chumash, all that puts together is all part of Hebrew. And then suddenly Gemara is in a completely different language. And it's like starting with ABCs over again. You know, the binyanim are not the same, and prefixes aren't the same. So there's definitely a language shift that has to be learned. The structures are completely different when it comes to Gemara. We know this. So we'll discuss some key structures and how to you know, teach those key structures or recognize those key structures. And the most important difference is that Gemara is not black and white. You know, it's full of debates, it's full of nuance and subtleties. And, you know, that's good. It's good that our children will, you know, be presented with a kind of honest, nuanced approach to Judaism and an honest, nuanced approach to life. And I think that's incredibly important. You know, I was talking with Rabbi Brand the other day, And I was reflecting on my drive to school back and forth and how I like to listen to the news. And I listened to a talk show radio host who's all the way on the right, and a talk show radio host who's all the way on the left. And I find that like no one can tell the truth, and no one can speak with nuance. And then I found the one radio station, the one category that's talked about on the radio with nuance and chachma, and that's sports. And that's it. That's it. Everything else is without nuance. But the Gemara is full of nuance and full of subtlety. Politics doesn't weigh into it at all. So it's important that we can teach that and show that there could be debates in the Gemara, and the debates are not necessarily resolved. The Amoraim will still be talking with each other, even though they stand their ground with their positions. And they still are in a certain sense like comrades in arms, even though they're at times arguing with each other. So that's like a really, really important yesod. And for our family, a lot of kids. Many of us have several kids. Like that's good. That's also an important lesson to teach, right? That there can be shalom after the battle is over. So this is kind of a very important kind of meta principle that our children will learn, which is that there can be debates and arguments and subtleties and also have peace. On that note, again, so language we'll talk about, structure we'll talk about, and how it's not black and white. And there are several parts, several ways in which it's not black and white. And I hope to explicate some of that today. But before I get there, I want to talk about this kind of the tension and the debate that can happen and how it could create further tension. So I was once advised, I was going to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, not to have a chavrusa with any of my roommates. And the reason why that is could be obvious, but when you have a chavrusa, a serious learning chavrusa, you're at equal levels, often there are debates that break out, and it can get there can be tension. We can have why are you not hearing my point? And you need to be able to step away from that. But if you have a chavrusa who's also your roommate, there isn't any space. And it could create a problem. We have to recognize that if we're going to learn Gemara at home with our children, that we are putting them in a dangerous situation. And we could be in a situation where some matter of tension comes up, even a subtle point about correcting or whatever, and there's nowhere they can go. They can't, they live in our house. There isn't anywhere else that they can go. We're their parents no matter what. So we have to tread very, very carefully, especially since the nature of the content of the Gemara is itself a debate. So we have to be extremely wary of making sure that our Gemara learning is done in an extremely safe way and a safe manner. That there's one Gemara that says that when fathers and sons learn, this is about adults, when fathers and sons learn in the Beis Medrash, they're like nasu oivin zelazet, it's like they're enemies. And then when they leave the Beis Medrash, nasu oavin zelazet, they're like a loving family. And it's important for us to find that balance of being able to bifurcate the argument and the disagreement and then step away and recognize the relationship. But that is difficult and it takes time, and something we have to be aware of and figure out how to navigate. Now, I can't say to have any command of that topic. It is. I have maybe limited advice and try to figure out how to approach that. But I've been interviewing certain rabbeim in our community and elsewhere, and a lot of them have had a tough time learning with a particular child of theirs. Meaning, like sometimes they're able to have this kind of relationship that involves intense learning with some of their children, but maybe one or two where it doesn't work out. They haven't figured out how to navigate that that split between the tension from the learning and then being able to step away. I don't mean this as I only mean to tell this as a Torellis, but I've heard that that Rav Soloveitchik himself had a tough time learning with some of his children, and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik had a tough time learning with some of his children. You know that and that it's not simple. It's not simple to be able to navigate the tensions that arise naturally from learning Gemara, from working on a disagreement and trying to interpret. So I am a kind of open ears as to how to do that. Anyone has any advice on what they've seen worked? I'm going to share a few points that I've garnered from the people I've interviewed and from my own experience. But I'm sure that, you know, I'm talking to experienced parents here. I'm sure there are similar situations of how to try to cut the tension. The first thing is to recognize that our children are just maturing as far as their thinking. Again, some think that the child's in 10th grade, so that's already a little bit older. But you know, a 5th, 6th, 7th grader, we should try to push them, especially if it's reviewing what they've learned in school. We should try to push them to explain something. Like, you know, can you explain what that question of the Gemara is? Can you explain what this machlokes is about? We should push them. We want them to learn as deeply as possible. But if we sense any kind of confusion in response to that question, like, you know, can you explain this Kal Vachomer? And our child responds with, what do you mean, it's a Kal Vachomer? And we have to be ready to hold back and not further, you know, interrogate our children. Because we can't ever have our learning be an interrogation. Right, that's not how a tarusa would work, anyways. So it's really important to, you know, be ready to ask questions. We should try to push our children to understand deeper, but pull back if we find any semblance of confusion. So that's point number one, the kind of diminishing tension. The next point is to think about language. Instead of saying something like, "How would you explain this line of Gemara?" It's more like, what is Rava saying in this case? You know, what is Rava saying here? What's the, how would Abaye, you know, argue his point? What's another way Abaye may have said that? And this is, that's a lesson I learned actually from a couple of speech classes that I took in NYU, that, you know, if maybe you could recognize if certain speakers that you're familiar with, when a speaker directs his mussar with the words you, everyone suddenly gets on the defensive. Oh, it was a terrible speech. But if he speaks about himself or he speaks in the abstracts, then you could hear it. Yeah. Well, the rabbi gave good muster. He really gave it to the guy sitting next to me. So we want to arrange that our language lends itself, that our children can actually separate themselves from the speaker of the Gemara and recognize there's a speaker in the Gemara, and that's what I think they're saying. And then when it's challenged, it's not a direct challenge against them. And that'll also help them kind of break with and develop their own maturity. They're thinking about the way someone else is thinking. They're not thinking about the way they are thinking, right? That's an important way to cut the tension and an important way to develop their own maturity on the kind of how the Gemara is not black and white. So that's another really, so again, we have two ways on how to cut the tension so far. The first is when we push for questions to pull back, we find that there's confusion, right? And the second way is our choice of words. We don't direct things as, how would you explain this? But how does Rava explain this? What might be another way that Rava says this? So language is another way to pull back and make sure that our questions are, and our discussion is one that's in the abstract and does not put our children on the defensive. Okay. Any comments or questions so far on this point? Okay. Another way to cut the tension, and this is important for us, is and it's really upon us, is that we need to be familiar with the Gemara. And this is if it's homework, we have to kind of try to keep up as best we can. And if we're doing our own learning, then we need to know it, or we need to be very open about, you know, a line that we don't know. Because if we're trying to kind of fumble our way through the Gemara, A, we're going to be distracted. B, our children might be a little impatient, like, what's going on, Abba, you know? And that's really important also, to make sure and diminish any confusion that might arise. And I see it true also with students taking tests or with new teachers. If they're not so certain about a specific svara or a specific argument, and they're second guessing themselves, and they find they have to explain it, it makes it much more difficult. Their own patience is short. There's a lot of reasons why it's really important that we either are very open with something that we don't know, or really strive to be experts in the field, and then be the expert in the situation. You know, I'm helping my child learn it, but I'm available to explain anything that he needs to know. And again, obviously it depends on the age. We're talking about fifth or sixth graders, that could be very easy. We're talking about seventh or eighth graders, that could be much more difficult for us to be experts in whatever Gemara is that they're learning. And certainly as they progress. So we need to either keep up or recognize that, you know, this is the limit of my prior knowledge, and we can learn it together. We have to be very open as to what, you know, how well we know the specific sig is. I remember, that's also an important lesson. I commented to my son about something we were learning, and I said, oh, I don't know this. And my son just said, Abba, how could that be? And I said, that happens. There are things that Abba doesn't know. You know, that itself is an important lesson. Some of our children think that their parents don't know anything, but some of us not. I think that's an important lesson. So again, not sticking our gun in this question, pulling back, using our language that's in the abstract, not about you, and either owning up to what we don't know, or owning the material and knowing it really well, so that our children know where we are holding and are not confused about what's going on, not working out with us. Okay, great. So that's point number three. And then point number four, and this is a point that I had already made when we talked about Lamin Chumash, and it's also true when we talked about Lamin Mishnayos, is that we have to be really, really careful when we correct our children. Right, if it's something that's interpretive, so okay, great. So we could talk about it, give them a second approach. But if it's something like translating the word that they're working on, you have to really know your kid. You know, does he want you to just say this and then move on and ignore the point, or does he want, or is he okay with you saying something like, try again? You want to try that word again? That could be very stressful. It sounds very nice. Try it again. But it could be very, very stressful. Sometimes our children just want, just tell me what the word really means, and then we'll move on. So again, that has to do with knowing where your kid is holding, knowing his patience level, his tolerance level, knowing if he's confident that you know you're going to be happy with him, even if he gets it wrong. But that's a really important way to kind of diminish the tension that could arise from learning to arise with spousal. And again, I said this before. Tension is being created when we learn Gemara with our kids. It is being created, and we need to figure out how to navigate. So again, any questions so far, or any comments on their own experience of how to kind of cut the tension or create shalom in our learning. So some kids like to hear riddles, and for a lot of Gemara is a riddle, and you know, kind of working it out or thinking about it, and it's true, like it is like one big puzzle or one big riddle that could be worked out. So that's a good way of thinking about much of the Gemara. It's not going to work for the Gemaras that they're reviewing in class, right? That's, they've learned it in school, and then they're just coming home to either practice reading it, or they're coming home to practice, you know, the Shakta Vatarya or word list. But if you're learning new Gemara, or you've asked them who you want to kind of probe to develop deeper thinking patterns. So then phrasing it as a riddle, not like what would you say, but like, you know, what do you think a person might do in this case? Or how does this point of Gemara fit with another point elsewhere? Like phrasing things as a riddle, a lot of kids really, really love riddles. And that could be another really helpful way of encouraging both deep thinking, yet at the same time, creating a situation that's kind of more fun and doesn't seem like a test and doesn't seem like they're being interrogated or challenged or feel on the defensive. You know, riddles are hard to get. They know they'll have the riddle and they'll be able to ask it to someone else next time. So that could be really helpful as well. Okay. I wanted to know if people could fill in the comments if your children are getting homework from school. I'm curious about that. I know some teachers obviously give a lot of homework, but most high school kids don't have homework for Gemara. But I am curious about the homework. And if there is homework, is it just reading the Gemara, or is it kind of like reviewing word lists or anything different than that? You know, a lot of schools, the younger kids have word lists that they have to memorize, and that could be, some kids are very happy to go over those word lists by themselves or to kind of be challenged, almost like a multiplication tables, you know, to go through word lists one at a time, and you know that's an easy way to participate and hear where they're holding. And we might think that, oh, they could spit back all these words. They know what all these words mean. And then you'll be reading the Gemara with them and you'll know that this word was on his list. You'll know he had the word, lema kasava. He had the phrase lema kasava, right? Let's suggest that he holds. And, he memorized it. He's able to spit it back to you. And you'll be on, you'll be looking at a Gemara and the phrase will be right there. And you'll want to say something like, you know this, we just did it. So we have to hold back. We have to make sure we hold back. And that we have to recognize that it is like a flawed system that we kind of create vocabulary lists that they can spit back. They have it on their short to memory. But it's only when they're learning it over and over and over again in the context of the Gemara that they'll get a feel for it. So again, the homework lists obviously have to be done. But they do actually have limited utility as far as learning Gemara. That's my own personal opinion. You know, they can spit back a word, but they need to hear how the word sounds in the context of the Gemara. Okay, so let's get back into the language of Gemara. Spend a couple of minutes. Oh, sorry, I didn't want to do the language. I want to speak about black and white. Right, talk about black and white. That's what I was talking about. Okay. This will be our last topic for the night, and then I'll pause for questions. It seems like some people have questions, but please ask questions if things come up. So shalom is the first thing, and how it's not black and white. So the conclusion of the Gemara is not always clear, right? Sometimes the Gemara concludes with akasha, and that is really unfamiliar for our children as far as learning has been until now, right? There are words that have to be read, there are sukkim that have to be read, and then there are mishnayos that have to be learned. And they're very, in a certain sense, cut and dry. They're black and white. This is the position, and even if there's a debate, so these are the two positions in the Mishnah, that's good. But when you get to the Gemara, it's kind of like, what's the logic? What's the, teasing out what the drasha is, and that is like a whole nother level of thinking about halacha and thinking about Judaism. And it's almost as if like God is not in the picture. God really is in the picture. He's right there. That's that, you know, there's so much in Pirkei Avos about Hashem listening to people learning and arguing it out. But we're not thinking about Hashem when we're learning the Gemara. We're thinking really, really deeply. And we're trying to push to go as deep as possible. And this is what Hashem wants. Hashem wants us to develop our minds and really tackle these Gemaras, even if the Gemara is not talking about brachos or Megillah or Pesachim, but working on monetary issues, right? You know, giving back lost objects and ben adam l'chaveiro. The Torah really wants us to get involved into and think about how to relate to other people on a very, very deep level. Our children are bright, and they're going to be developing their minds even further and further and further. We want them to know that the place for them to really make use of their growing knowledge and intellect is in the area of learning Torah and in the area of their interpersonal relationships, you know, relating to people. And most of the Gemaras that they're going to be learning in high school and on yeshiva are Gemaras about interpersonal relationships, right? Bava Kama, Mitzvah, Vastra, Kiddushin, Gittin. This is how to have relationships with people. So for them to realize that relationships are not black and white, they demand a subtlety in thinking about other people's perspective. And they'll get that, they'll be able to approach those things on a much deeper level if they have deep ways of thinking about Gemara. And of course, Hashem's interested in that. Of course, Hashem's interested in that. So we're thinking about, you know, an animal goring someone else's animal and having to pay money for it. So in the Mishnayos, that's so foreign to us. You know, none of us have animals. I don't even know what it means that an animal gores another animal. But if we think about, no, I have something I was supposed to be taking care of, responsibility. And I didn't protect it from harming other people. I didn't think about the harm that it might cause to other people, how I'm going to be obligated to pay for that, and how that payment relates to creating a deterrent for me to make sure that it doesn't damage in the future. That is an abstract way of thinking about it. We're moving away from the page, away from the black and white. That makes the Gemara learning much more real for their everyday life. So we have to kind of move away from the black and white of the Mishnayos and move into the concepts, the ideas, and the abstract of the Gemara. And then suddenly, when you get into this abstract, which we'll call Lamdas, suddenly Gemara is incredibly relevant for every aspect of their lives. And this is the truth. Torah, on this high level, Torah has its own purpose for existing, and it is relevant to every aspect of our lives. And our children will ask, and they've asked us to teachers also, now, how is this relevant for our lives? Well, the answer is, we have to step back. We have to create the abstract. We have to move away from the black and white and try asking what is the real logical underpinnings of this sugya, and then it's fully applicable to every part of our lives. And this is even more so for those halachos about animals goring each other than it is for the halachos in Megillah, Gemara Megillah about Kriyas HaTorah. That's really relevant for only one topic, and that topic is Kriyas HaTorah. So yeah, you want to learn Kriyas HaTorah. It's true. That actually is practical, but that's practical. It's only in that kind of vacuum setting. Whereas the Gemaras that seem less practical, those are the ones that are actually most relevant. Because once you get the abstract, it's the way people interact with each other. It's the responsibility you have to your personal items. It's, you know, the care that you have for and concern for the effect that you have on the world around you. So that's part of moving away from the black and white and creating that oneness. We parents and teachers have to serve as that bridge between these concrete cases that are and arguments that are so old into the real life situation that's coming up in front of them. And this abstraction is something that is new for younger learners, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. This is new and still needs to be practiced even for older learners. And yeah, I still get the question from older kids, why are we learning this? But it's an important question to deal with. So on that note, it is something to think about, you know, which Gemaras do we learn first? And obviously, if we're doing homework, we're doing homework, and we follow the system that that the schools have set out, which Gemaras they learn first, et cetera, et cetera. And they have their own reasons for why they learn each of those Gemaras. We could discuss which Gemaras are important for developing structure, and which Gemaras are important for developing language. But we also have to think about which Gemaras are important for kind of stepping back and creating an abstract. And that is really, for new Gemara learners, that's very hard. One of my teachers, Rabbi Moshe Stav from Karen Biata, he once told me that children should start learning Gemara with Kol HaBasar, which is a parak in the middle of Chulin. And it's actually the parak that a lot of people learn only when they're like going for smicha, because it's about the halachas of the kitchen. And Bas Bechala, then it is in a certain sense, it opens up very, very complex worlds. So we said, why should kids start learning Kol HaBasar? This is so difficult. Rav Stav said, such a simple idea. He said, because the basic language of the Gemara, the concept of the Gemara, is in the kitchen. These are all things that they could see. Right? It's very easy for them to think in the abstract about milchiks, the abstract about fleshiks. The cases might be very difficult. In the real life applications, these cases are extremely difficult. But that there's milchiks and fleshiks, and there are rules on how we relate to milchiks and fleshiks. That's easy. So I don't know if he was really advising that we start with this Gemara, but he was saying that it's the least abstract of all the Gemaras out there. So Kol HaBasar is that was like his advice. I've never heard of anyone who started teaching their Gemara to kids on that place. But it's not abstract. Not abstract. You want to kind of build up to how to a more profound levels of application only later on. So a lot of schools start with brachos, learning Gemara brachos. And that's also, that's also in a certain sense not so abstract. They're familiar with brachos, they're familiar with davening, they say Kriya Shema, and they know, when you daven, there's certain rules that have to be done. And if they're in shul and they're seeing people not talk at certain parts of davening, and they're seeing that people talk at other parts of davening, they get it. Okay, yes, so we learned the halachas of not talking during Birkas Kriya Shema and during Kedusha and Shemona Esrei. I'm seeing that in the Gemara as well. So that's also helpful. That's also helpful that it's not so abstract and eventually get there. But again, Brachos doesn't have that kind of broader applicability to their entire life. It has applicability to their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And right now, younger kids, especially for 11th to 12th graders in high school, their relationship with Hashem is basically whatever their parents and their teachers tell them. Like, it isn't their own, they're not developing their own relationship with Hashem. So for them to use Masechas Brachos as an abstract, they're not ready for that. So they could really find abstracts in the Gemaras in Bava Kama and Bava Metzia. That's where they're ready. That's where they're holding. They're just thinking about having their own things and taking care of their own things. What happens if you lose things? So it's classic that many people will begin learning Gemara with Eidah Metzias. Eidah Metzias, and we'll talk about some of the structures and some of the language of why that's important, but everyone knows what a lost object is. They've lost objects themselves. And they found objects themselves. And for them to think about a lost object in the street, what does it look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? And then get an abstract from that it's, they're really capable of doing that. They're really capable of doing that. So I'll give one example of that kind of abstract, an application to another realm. And then I think I would say I would stop. Pause for questions now. Anyone have any questions so far? Then I'll give that one application. Okay. So in Eilam Metzias, which is the second paragraph of Metzia, which discusses lost objects, there's a principle, there's a kind of a scenario that's described as aveda midas. And that is a situation where it's evident that the owner has put the object down, but by the placement of the object, it's clear that the owner doesn't really care about the object. And it would be totally fine with him if someone else took it. So that seems pretty technical, right? So then what application does that have? Application that it has is if you find an object, it's like the guy doesn't care about it. Like that's it. That seems to be it. But it's not really true. This is application to how a person relates to their own stuff. This is the abstract. What do we derive from this? So, you know, I there's a chess club in Ida Crown, and there's a whole bunch of chess sets. And often it's the case that a chess game will have to be cut short in the middle of breakfast, or you know, after breakfast, the first period has started, whatever. Kids have to stop, move away from the game, and go to class. And it has come to my attention that students will come to a board and see that the pieces are on the board, and then just reset it up, even though someone else had been playing that game. And some things similar to that. And I've been wondering, like, why is that happening? Is it because they don't care that there was someone else playing the game? I think the answer is this principle of aveda midas. See, when you play the game of chess, right, pieces are taken off the board, and then they kind of just end up on the side of the board. It's kind of a jumble of pieces. So if a new person comes up on the board and he sees the chess set, it just looks like a board in disarray. People are not here, and the pieces are all over the place. But if you put the pieces down on the board as they're supposed to be, and the pieces that have been taken off are lined up like exactly opposite each other on the side of the board in a misudar fashion, then people won't play that game. They'll see that the game was cared for and put aside, and they'll respect that someone's in the middle of this game, and now they'll use another board, use other pieces. So that is the abstraction from this principle of aveda midas. So how did I discuss this principle with my 11-year-old? Obviously, talked about cleaning up his room. If he'd like his little brother to respect his items and not take his items and not take his Pokemon cards and not make what's it do? I think my 5-year-old likes to take his older brother's shirts and tie them around his shoulders as a cape and, you know, to go out like a little superhero action. So if he wants his little brother not to do that, he has to treat his clothes and in a way that reflects care and respect for his own clothing. So if he makes his bed, folds his clothing, puts away his Pokemon cards, so then his little brother knows they're cared for and he's not going to go with them. And I made the point also, this is true for his Legos as well. You know, if he kind of puts his Legos in an orderly fashion, they won't be taken care of. So if we could kind of create the abstraction from these principles about how to relate to your own stuff and how to think about how someone else would relate to that, those things, that's really the heart of Gemara. And that comes from Lamdas. And that's, I mean, I've given a very simple and benign example of it, but Gemara is infinitely relevant to our lives. Every part of our life is really some sugya out there and can be, we can have kind of bring wisdom, the wisdom of Torah to that, to whatever the conversation is, whatever that idea is going on. I mean, I also convinced my son to start cleaning up his room a little bit more. So that was also an added bonus, and he was defensive about that too. So that was like Shalom was important too, I think we could do it. We can do it. We all can do it. We all can kind of develop our children into mature individuals who are abstract thinkers, who have nuance, who are no longer black and white, and a tremendous tool that we have to really form our children into mention is Gemara. Okay, I'm open to any questions anybody has. Really appreciate it. I'm just going to check out the chat. think there's some comments here. Yeah, huge, huge word lists. That's the problem. Yeah. Okay, so maybe we'll talk some more. Maybe we'll talk some more next time about a little bit more about the abstract. Give some more examples of how to make it abstract, and we'll talk some more about some of the language. Anybody have any questions? I'm gonna kind of leave the chat open. Anybody thinks of any questions they'd like to have discussed in the next session? I'd love to hear it. Otherwise, it was very nice to spend the evening with everybody. And I'll see you next week.
Yes, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, good night. This was great.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you. Yeah. And then there was one.
This like a normal shear, or is it?
No, it's not really normal shit. It's really about when you get on it.
Oh, with who?
With you. But I was just doing this with Safta. Say hi.
Hi.
Or Saba. I don't even know.
Which one is it?
Well, I can't tell. It says that's Safta's name. It's a ceiling. It's Safta and Saba. Hi.
Wait, this is...
Oh, you're muted. We can't hear you.
I love that. We love that. It was so good on so many levels. And I'm so glad that we did this. And I did this because of my own interests and Saba also, but also because of the blessing of 21 grandchildren and wanting to improve our skills because we're sometimes there for homework time. So,
homework. That's so great. Great. Yeah, the word lists, they're still bad. But- For some people they help. Ezra has giant word lists. Ezra, what do you think about the word lists for homework?
They help.
They do help, yeah.
Yeah, but only if it's the specific words that a lot of people are having trouble with, and only if it's a lot of words.
Only if it's a lot of words?
Yeah. Because it only you only practice, like, when you learn Gemara, you're going to know the words that are normally hard for people when they start because it was hard for you, and then you practice that.
Mm-hmm.
So the words that you won't know so well are the words that you got and you were satisfied with, but you still had trouble doing them.
Mm. So the easy words you know, right. The hard words you know because you practice them, just those words that are not easy, but you didn't practice them.
Right.
That's subtlety right there. Nuance.
That's a very subtle, nuance.
Right. So it helped a lot because Rebbe didn't put in things like Mahatma Devadavi.
Right.
But he put in like a bunch of words. And some of them I found that when he just asked them to me, it was hard for me to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mixed up two words like on the test, what's the din and what is.
Oh my.
Yeah.
And mahu.
Yeah. I mixed those two up.
Mm-hmm. How is your arm?
But I was just
my arm Baruch Hashem. I got a cast yesterday.
Yeah, I see you're holding it up. I wasn't sure.
I'm supposed to be elevating not only the hand, but the whole arm above my heart level. But the cast that I got, it was bright pink. It was really very pretty. It looked like bubblegum. But it was impinging on my nerves and cutting off my circulation. So I went back in today and got a new cast, which is much more comfortable. And this one, Ezra, one I asked them for a white one so it could be a blank canvas for my grandchildren's artwork.
That's hilarious.
So I thought, if it's pink, you know, bright pink, you can't use yellow, you can't use orange, you can't use pink, you know, whatever, they won't show up. And a white one, you can use whatever colors. So Ezra, I'm looking forward to you and your siblings coming over, and your cousins coming over, and your parents coming over and signing my cast.
That's great. I just realized that this entire conversation is still being recorded from this year. So I'll have to cut off the last
okay, bit.
This is totally fine. I'll take care of that. But I'm happy to hear that you have a new cast and that the kids have a new art project to do. did you have any swelling?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
A lot. And the whole area that's casted is all sorts of interesting colors underneath it.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. So, apparently, bones are very... vascular.
You don't think vascular.
I thought I knew what the word vascular meant, but now I'm not sure.
A lot of blood supply.
Really?
Oh, blood, yeah. So you don't think of that in bones. But when you break a bone, you have a lot of bleeding, apparently. So this is 2.5 weeks after the accident, and underneath it, it's still turning all these colors from black and blue.
Green and yellow.
Yeah, as it starts to heal more, it's not so much black and blue. It turns more green and yellow. It's really like a psychedelic painting underneath.
Wait, are you just joking?
No,
I'm not.
Green and yellow.
Yeah.
Like.
And last night before like I got cast today, just my fingers were dark. All. But now they're returning to normal color.
Refor Shalima, we are davening for you.
Thank you.
All right.
We love you all and really appreciate the shiur tonight, and we look forward to more.
All right. Have a good night. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.